Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 12 of Season 10 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Derek McDuff of the Underrated Podcast. Welcome back to the show, Derek.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
Yeah, hope you're not getting too full by all those buffets that you're going through.
Right, yes. All the lobster bisques and all that, and steak dinners.
Yep, that's what they do there.
Yep.
And they do it all for the tips. So.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
they make you feel bad afterwards that you didn't tip them enough.
Right. They're just, you know, yeah. But they, you know what? It's good service. So, and those guys make not a lot of money. So, you know what? Might as well throw them a couple.
That's true. That's very true. All right, so minute 12 begins with Garber finishing his thought and ends with Garber continuing his spiel. So we ended things yesterday with our tour guide, Zachary Garber, starting to tell these Japanese businessmen, you know, about the New York train system. And we basically get him for a fraction of a second, where he just right. says the word track. That's all we get to hear from him today at the beginning of this minute. And then, you know, as he says that, we get a shot of the train. You know, we have the six train, you know, with of Pelham 123 just, you know, screeching by, doing what it needs to do. And then we see that Mr. Green is... First of all, I'm going to go back a second. You can see from the exterior when the train is going by, you still see the two boys jumping at the front of the train, you know, by the window, which is great that they actually are paying attention to that detail. Yeah. You know, because we've seen it inside the train, but when you're showing a shot from outside of the train and you can still see them, then I think that's just great the way that they do.
Yeah, that nice little attention to detail there.
Yeah. And then the next shot is a close up of the crowded cab with Green, Blue, and Denny Doyle. And Green then says, "Say when, Mr. Blue." And then Blue says, "You just keep going, will ya?" And so, first of all, I really love the way that this is all set up, because we don't know how this whole heist is set up. We don't know, you know, what do you think? Do you think Mr. Blue is the leader of this gang, or do you think he's someone who's been hired to put together a team to go hijack this train?
Oh, that's a good question. So, yeah, because, like, you know, with all the names of the colors, like, it's very, obviously it's a movie that would come out later, but it's very Reservoir Dogs.
Well, where do you think Tarantino got the idea from? He took it from this movie.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, because Tarantino famously borrows quote unquote things from films that he likes yeah. quite a bit.
Sure.
So I'm wondering, like, is he not, I don't think he's the guy who puts it all together. You know, I forget what actor that is,
Joe.
But he's like,
you're talking about Joe.
Joe. Yeah. He's not the Joe. I think he's like the Harvey Keitel or something, you know, mm-hmm. where he's kind of like in charge and running all these guys. So, maybe he has a Joe, right? He's the guy who's like, I'm going to set this up. Joe, I need you to find me some dudes. You know, I think that's what it is. He's got this plan, but he's got an intermediary who knows some people, because he clearly doesn't know these guys, as we'll find out later.
Yeah, of course.
But he's like, hey, he's got a guy who can find people with a specific set of skills.
Right. Okay. And then Denny Doyle starts talking, and he goes, "You know, you're still in switching. Why don't you pick it up in the series? You're green all the way." And then Green goes, "We're in no hurry." And then he sneezes. He goes, "Your cold sounds pretty bad, because I woke up in the middle of the night with it." And then we hear like a big pop. And then Mr. Blue goes, "What happened?" And then Doyle says, "Must have bucked." And Blue says, "You told me you could drive this thing." He goes, "It wasn't me. It's the train. She bucks all the time, especially in that switching. She's a dog." So this is a very interesting conversation, in my opinion, because they make it seem as if all three of them are on the same level, even though they've basically they're coercing Danny Doyle to be doing this, to even be there, to be listening to everything that they're saying. But the whole conversation is, first of all, they're telling us that Mr. Green is a former Motorman and understands all these different things, and that he has a common vernacular or language or jargon with Danny Doyle, which Mr. Blue has no clue about all these different things. He just knows that, okay, I'm going to tell you where the train's going to stop, that type of thing. So do you have any idea what switching means?
Switching between tracks, I would assume.
No, that's no,
No.
nope. It's no, because he also says switch in. There's no G there,
Okay.
and so
Okay.
it's actually a term for when you're using with trains. It's the process of moving individual rail cars or entire trains between different tracks, or to assemble and disassemble trains. This is often done within rail yards, industrial areas, or terminals, and it's done at lower speeds. That's the idea here. That's the important thing of what they're trying to tell us. It's being
Okay.
kept in a low gear, because you're not moving fast. You're just moving trains to, I guess, connect them together and stuff like that.
Right. That's a whole plot point in Unstoppable, which we talked about
Exactly.
yesterday.
That's right. That's
Yeah.
I have a really strong feeling that Tony Scott did Palom and then said, "Hey, wait a second, I need to do something more about trains."
Yeah. He's like, I've got this. I've got some more to say about these trains before I go off. I got one more train movie in me.
That's right. And the line that Denny says is, "Why don't you peg it up to the series?" That means that why don't you move the gear shift to a position that will make the train go faster. So like you have the guy who's being kidnapped slash hijacked telling the driver, "Oh well, change the gear shift and you can go a little faster."
Yeah.
And then he says to him, "You're green all the way." And having seen this whole movie, I'm assuming you know what that means.
Yes, yes.
That
No red lights.
that's right, that they're completely there's solely green lights along the way. But what I love about that line is he's saying to Mr. Green, "You're green all the way."
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Not a very appropriate.
So I don't know if that's done just that way or not, but it's still it's a great way for them to give us this information as it's going along. So I like what they do there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and we talked about last week or last yesterday about how there was some really we got some really good exposition with Matthau, and that was like a really clever exposition. And this is like now it's like okay, it's like another clean minute where like there's a little bit on each side, but like of just like hey, we're getting some more exposition now for what's going on with these other guys. We need to understand. We really need this is a movie where there's a lot of logistics, a lot of moving parts from both the good guys and the bad guys. And it is telling you, this is movies telling you how to understand and watch this movie here. And that's like last week we got what's going on at the station, and now we're getting what's going on with the train with these guys and understanding these characters. Like, okay, Mr. Blue is clearly like kind of the one running things. And then you have Mr. Green, who is not as much of a hardened pro as these guys, but he's somebody who is maybe a small time criminal, as we might find out later, but who. He is more of a he has the technical knowledge they needed to bring on somebody like this to help them do the job.
Right, he's their hacker,
The guy in the chair.
that's right. He's the guy who they just need for his specific skills.
Exactly, yeah.
So and it makes sense, and it works well the way that they set that up for the whole thing. So I like that. I like the way that they do that. And
Yeah, I hard agree.
then the minute moves along and we're back with Garber, still walking and talking with actually before we go there, I want to talk again about the fact that the camera shot of this conversation is also amazing because it really shows us how cramped these three guys are in this cab. It's mostly shot, and it's mostly shot from the front. So it's as if they put it directly on the front of the front of the train, just to look in and watch the whole thing. And we also have like a little I guess silent part where we have Gray and Brown walking towards this particular train, with Bud, the conductor, along the way. And like Gray then stays in the front car, and Brown stays in the second car with Bud, which we'll get to later in the week. There'll be more of an explanation as to what it is that they're why they brought him closer and stuff like that. But again, almost the entire shot is from in front of them, and there's only one little part of it which is from the back when Denny turns around when he's arguing with Mr. Blue about the train, meaning that this is the way the train works and stuff like that. So
And it's a really good establishing how claustrophobic this whole thing is and establishing the geography. And you mentioned that like front on shot, that's a really good shot because like you said, they're all so close together, and so obviously this is like in widescreen, you have so much space on the other side, so you see that there's like some train, there's some track and stuff like that, but they are it really if this is just like a full screen, you don't get the fact that they are really cramped in here as much as it's like, okay, these guys are just taking up a whole frame. Is it's like these no, these guys are here in like kind of the center of the frame, and there's a lot on either side, and they're just smushed in.
right, exactly. And then the last 10 seconds, we jump back to the transit authority, and we see a cop standing there looking at a computer board, I guess you can say, of the 70s, with all the little flashing lights and stuff like that. And then Garber enters the room with his four guests, but they all come in before him. Like he's we see him come in and close the door, to the whole thing. So, it's interesting. And one of the guys is standing there with a camera, taking pictures of everything that's going on here and stuff like that, which is very funny because you'd think that there's a little bit of a they want to keep some stuff secretive, I guess.
You don't want all that, get like all your behind the scenes police stuff getting out necessarily to everybody. But I think it's another, like we talked about a little bit yesterday about like, them playing on some stereotypes. I think this is playing on the Japanese tourist stereotype a little bit.
Yes, for sure. And as you said, it's somewhat something that they wouldn't do today. Because it's the way that they did things in the 70s, making it I think you used the phrase pseudo-racist with the way that they did it, which again you can see that's specifically what they did. But you also see that these guys are just bored here. You have one of the guys at a what looks like a disc jockey station because of the way they the microphone is set up there. So like he's just sitting there reading the paper, and you see he's got like a rapper from Bayer behind him on the phone. Yes. Isn't Bayer I thought it's like like an aspirin or something, isn't it?
It's like it's like an aspirin, or you can like there's like a pain relief cream made by the same people.
Yeah, that's I mean, like I did a search and didn't really come up with anything on it, which is very interesting. Bayer did Alka-Seltzer. They're the company that interesting.
Checks out.
But no, but that, sorry, they bought up the company of Alka-Seltzer in 78, so that wouldn't work here.
Oh, okay.
Right decade, wrong
Not yet. Yeah, right. A little 4 years too early.
Right. So okay, so Bayer is an aspirin company that was founded in Germany in 1863.
Right around that fr same time as that first
There you
subway.
go, in London. That's right. Yeah. Very good. You have good memory from yesterday. Yeah.
Recall.
Yeah. And the company actually was supposed to be doing dye stuffs, which the whole idea of coloring substances and stuff like that. And over the years they realized that they found a type of aspirin that they could use. So they
Okay. Interesting. I love that when, because you find out like Nintendo had been around since like the 1800s and they were like making playing cards and stuff like that. It's just interesting this week see the way
Exactly.
companies develop like that.
It is Bayer is the 34th most commonly prescribed medication in the U.S.
34. Okay.
With more than
Well, I
70
guess
million prescriptions a year.
Okay. All right. Well, got to bump those numbers up. Those are rookie numbers.
Well, and I wouldn't necessarily say a rookie number. I mean, the
No, I'm being
34th most
facetious.
common. I mean, last season we talked about Viagra and that has very high numbers also for obvious
Yeah, no,
reasons. No, I know.
I'm just
Of course
joking.
you are. I know. I'm not that doesn't surprise me. Yeah. So whatever. I mean, nowadays they have a whole bunch of different pharmaceutical products that are very well known and bought.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's any of them that I'm like really familiar with. They do the Yaz birth control pills also. So
Okay. All right, cool.
they make Rennie antacid tablets. Ciprofloxacin is a it's a antibiotic that's used called Cipro. I think I've heard of that one. Yeah, so they're very they're a company that's still doing very well after what is it, 150 years almost, 140 years.
Yeah, still going strong.
Yeah, and they're definitely still going strong because they're still acquiring all these different companies. You know,
Yeah.
which when you're doing that, it means that you're doing something right.
Right, I guess so.
And at this point, Garber continues his conversation with them, and he goes, "This is the headquarters of the Transit Police, which occupies the entire second floor of this building. We call it the Neuve Center." I love how he says Neuve. He doesn't say nerve. He says
The
the Neuve
Neuve
Center.
is a very Mathau
Yep,
delivery. The Neuve
the
Center.
Neuve Center. Which I think they're sort of trying to make fun of the fact that he's saying that because nothing is happening here. This is the nerve center,
Yeah.
which is completely banal. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Everyone's just bored out of their minds, and we'll see more about that
Yeah.
tomorrow.
And I do love a tro that trope. Hope of like we get introduced to like a place like this and it's just like, oh, there's this is so boring, nothing happens here, and then later on in the movie it becomes the most crazy hectic place, but I love that kind of recurring motif that you see in a lot of movies where it's like, yeah, this is just kind of like, oh, this is such a boring off day, little do we know how crazy it's gonna
That's right.
get.
So Garber says that that takes up the entire second floor of this building. Do you have any idea what this building means?
I mean the police station, I'm gonna
Okay.
guess,
Oh.
or are they City Hall?
Well, that's the question. Where do you think they are?
I guess they must be City Hall, right? Because they come from another, like the diplomats come down from that mezzanine, as we talked about yesterday, that seems to be not police related. So that's my guess is City Hall.
Okay, well, they're actually in one police plaza,
Oh, okay.
which houses a lot of different things. It's near City Hall. It's not in City Hall itself. You know what? They're probably not in the current 1PP at this point because the current 1PP only opened on October 16th, 1973. So,
Okay, yeah,
he
so
doesn't,
just a
he's
year
not
prior, yeah.
mentioning, okay, this is a brand new place or something like that. I mean,
Right.
1PP has 14 floors. So again, that also could theoretically fit in. The old 1PP was at 240 Center Street. So
Okay.
it's possible that that's where they are. Yeah, I have a feeling they're still in the old 1PP. That's what.
Yeah, it does not look brand new.
No, not at all. But yeah, and that's all I have to say about this particular minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
I think we hit all the bases here.
All right, excellent. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Blues Day Tuesday, where my guest will give their top five Robert Shaw performances. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up.
Yeah, I'll just say this really worked out because that we had the Monday math hour minute yesterday when we had a whole minute of getting introduced to math hour. Now Tuesday, it just lined up perfectly. Like, I don't think we really, this it just worked out. These are the days of the week, unless you had really planned this or
Well,
but
I told
like
Joseph Sargent when he was, editing the movie, edit this way so that
right, there we
when
go.
51 years from now, when we're going to talk about it, we'll be able to.
Well, you get to choose what days that we're talking about these, but yeah, I
Well,
think
no,
it worked out
I
very
get to
well.
choose, but I choose for the entire season. So.
So it really worked out, and now we're getting Robert Shaw here. But yeah, my number five is A Man for All Seasons. Classic. Shaw getting to really bite into those English like theatrical chops there. So had to mention that one. Shaw, like I said, is another actor. He's an actor I really like a lot, but I haven't seen too much of his stuff. More like I really like him in a couple roles that I'll get to here. My number four, I would say, is probably this movie. He's my first time seeing it, like I said. But he's phenomenal. He's got that kind of menace that like he's doing it so low key, but he's just so dangerous. He seems like a tiger that is constantly ready to pounce. And you see just hints of his backstory about he was this mercenary in Africa, and his relationship with the other members of his crew and how he interacts with them and how he interacts with Matthau, I think, is fantastic. Number three, got to go with the James Bond flick, From Russia with Love. Like he's you you know you got to shout out James Bond when you can, so I'm gonna do that here. And then I think number one and two for me
No, you
are
got
really, really.
one and two are the same. No,
Was
what
that?
about number two?
Yeah, no, so I'm saying number one and two are big for me. These are the top. These two are big roles for me. And that number two is where he's playing another criminal. He is once again. It's a sort of similar type to this, but that would be The Sting. I absolutely love that movie. He's the quote unquote bad guy in that movie that, Paul Newman and Robert Redford are kind of trying to rip off and pull the Sting on, and he's so menacing in that movie, and there's so many reverses and reveals and like what's even going on, and he's just you're re he's really intimidating. You're like, oh wow, if he finds out what's going on, these guys are all dead. So fantastic in that. And then I mean, it's an obvious pick for number one. But it's got to be Jaws, right? Like him as Quint is one of the all-time movie characters. There's still I just saw something I was scrolling on Instagram or something the other day. There was a guy as Quint, like come to Universal Studios. There's a big fish. He does that thing, and it's so different than a lot of the stuff he does, where he's just he's not doing his accent and all. He's just this kind of gruff. I've been chasing this fish. He gives that whole speech about when he was on the USS Indianapolis and they all, were in the water. That is one of the all-time great movie speeches. I'm sure a lot of your other guests will put this at number one, and I try to be
Yeah,
different when I can, but I
you have to be
also
true to
would,
yourself. That's the idea. Yeah.
yeah, like I can't not put it at number one. It's so iconic and great.
Right. Understandable. I actually just rewatched it again 2 weeks ago. Such a great movie.
Nice, nice. It's really, and it's the 50th
Yes.
anniversary this year,
This
so.
month. Well, this month as of recording. But all right, and now we will play the daily game of Name That Remake. So let's
All right.
spin the wheel and see what we get. And round and round the wheel goes. Okay. So this is a movie that came out in 1979 and was remade in 2003.
Think I might know, but let me, as I'm trying to think of the years, I
You're
might be
already gonna
off,
get
but
well, you're
I
gonna
have
guess
a
even without me telling
inkling.
you the
No. I want to wait to hear a clue because I might be wrong. But I have I'm not sure if I'm right on the years, but I know I'm thinking of something that came was I'm remade early 2000s, came out in the 70s, but it might be the years might be slightly
Okay.
off.
Well,
It might
okay.
be, yeah,
So
we'll
it's
see.
about a dentist who is taken on an adventure into Central America by a man who he just met and who will shortly become part of the family.
Okay, I don't think it's the one I was thinking of because I was thinking of
No,
Manchurian
Manchurian
Candidate.
Candidate, the original Manchurian
So yeah.
Candidate came out in 62.
Okay. Man who okay, 2003, a man who a dentist who goes to South
A
America, someone
dentist
becomes part of the
who is
family.
taken to South America by a man who within a few days will be related to him.
Okay, so he's marrying into the family, then, I'm assuming. 2003 and said 79. Okay. I don't think I've seen either of these movies. That does not ring a bell. I'm trying to think of like what movies came out in those years that would have been.
Okay, so the
Can I get it?
2003 version
Yeah.
stars Albert Brooks and Michael Douglas. And the 1979 version is Peter Falk and Alan Arkin.
Okay, this is tough because like the only I mean I know that obviously this is not it. The only Oliver Brooks movie I can think of from 2003 is Finding Nemo, which is
No.
clearly not this. I might be stumped on this one.
All right, I'll give you the full synopsis. On the eve of their children's
Okay.
marriage, New York City in-laws Sheldon Cornpet and Vince Ricardo embark on a series of misadventures involving the CIA, the Treasury Department, and Central American dictators.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know this one,
And
I don't think. I don't. You're gonna tell me, and I'm gonna be like, ah, of
the
course.
synopsis for the one from 2003 is right before his daughter's wedding, a mild-mannered foot doctor. So you see in the remake, he's a foot doctor, not a dentist. Discovers that his
Oh.
future son-in-law's father is a free-wheeling international spy,
Albert Brooks and
Michael
who was in? Who
Douglas.
else was in the remake? Yeah, I give up. I
It's
don't
called The
know this
In-Laws.
one. Okay, yeah, would not have gotten
Okay.
that. I'm gonna be real. I did
Okay.
not know that movie.
Again, the one from 79, I believe, is really fun. I'm not a fan of the one from
Okay.
2003, even though I like both Albert
Okay. I
Brooks
mean,
and Michael Douglas. Just the I've mentioned this so many times. I'm not a fan of remakes, so
right. Yeah. Sometimes they hit, but like, yeah, a lot of times you're like, what? Why
Exactly.
was this made?
And this is one of those movies. All
Yeah.
right.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell people once again where they can find Derek McDuff?
Yeah, you can find me on Underrated, or look up the Underrated Movie Podcast on your podcast player of choice. Got almost 170 episodes now, at the time this is coming out, on all kinds of underrated movies. We talk about underrated, underappreciated, and under the radar films there every other Monday. You can also go to underratedmoviepodcast.com, two links to all of my stuff, including a few other shows that I do, Infinity Stones and Dragon Bones, about Marvel Cinematic Universe. I also do a show called Midnight Film Society every other week on Friday, where I talk about more recently released stuff, and a few other things as well. But that's all the links to that are on underratedmoviepodcast.com, or just look up underrated movie podcast
All
on the
right,
podcast feed.
excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, chew.
Zoot tight.